What is up, everyone? Welcome to Toffee Blues USA, your choice for everything American style, which this past week has come to be known as having a little bit of a different ring to it. It's sort of like, hey, we never get relegated and we're totally static and we play the same teams every year. American style, right? That's what everyone is saying because of this nonsense that just hit the Premier League and pretty much the rest of Europe like a truck. So we'll get into that in a minute because I have to lead with that. But what's more important? Jake Altman's more important, everybody. Jake Altman from Cleveland Evertonians, Cleverton. Yeah, Jake Altman's back. Everybody give him a nice soft clap. You know, because there may be somebody sleeping in the other room with the kids. Jake, welcome back, man. It's good to see you.
Okay. Thanks for having me again. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So, Jake, you picked it. We picked an interesting week to have you on, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really to talk about. Nothing really went on this week, right? No, so it should be quick.
Yeah. It's So we just have to the elephant in the room, Super League, obviously, and that fell down, but people are still claiming it's still possibly in play at some point. Jake, what are your thoughts on all this nonsense, man? This is so bizarre, surreal.
I think watching it play out in you know real time with social media and everything was a lot like. There was something very cinematic about it, you know, watching it, you know, you first started hearing the rumblings and then, you know, all of a sudden it was, okay, this is maybe a real thing. And then it was a real thing. And then, you know, you had the fans striking back and then it wasn't a real thing anymore. And I thought, you know, while I was watching it play out, it, you know, as it felt so cinematic, it felt like one particular piece of production, and that is the second act of the musical and or the movie Les Misérables, where you know you had this big bad group who had all the means to do what they wanted to do, and then you have the fans who really like all we can do is you know build barricades out of desks and chairs and you know whatever else we can find in the street. And, you know, but at the end of the day, it felt like it was building and building and building. And then it exploded much like that second act of that particular musical, if you've seen it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then just as quickly as it exploded, it was over, you know, just very, very strange times.
Yeah. I was like narrating it. I have one of my buddies at work. Kyle, he's a big sports fan, but he's not a big soccer/football, whatever you want to call it, fan. Like he loves the Yankees, so he's a baseball guy. He loves the Rangers, so he's a hockey guy. He loves the Giants, so he's an American football guy. He likes like every other sport except for this one. And I'm constantly having to deal with nonsense from him when it comes to like all the people, you know, falling on the ground and pretending like they're hurt. I'm like, sometimes I just want to go to the floppers and be like, "Look, you're ambassadors for the sport, and you're pissing people off. You gotta." But I actually was narrating the whole saga to him. And it's like every hour I had new news for him. I'm like, okay, now this guy from Manchester United has resigned. Somebody from Juventus was rumored to have resigned as well. And so it was like he was like, "What's the fallout now?" And I got him totally psyched about hearing about soccer for like the first time. It was great. But it was really just the fact that nothing like this really happens in sports. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know,
nothing comes to mind that's even similar.
Yeah. I mean, I was seeing, I think his name's Aaron West on, you know, he's a soccer pundit. He's, you know, seems like a super awesome guy. He was comparing it to if all the big NCAA tournament basketball teams, you know, he was like, if Carolina and Duke and Kentucky and UCLA and Indiana and all those programs decided we're just going to be you know, and we're going to throw in Georgia Tech and NC State just for the heck of it. We're gonna have our own tournament every year, you know. And I was like, wow, that's a good analogy. I'm down with that.
Subtle jabs at Arsenal and Tottenham. I like that.
and he was like, yeah, this is a potentially offensive analogy. And I was like, yeah, some people get pissed at that. I got it. But then again, I don't know if the Georgia Tech State folk would be all too happy because, you know, State's won a national championship at least, a couple maybe. Anyway, just a strange thing, and there was a lot of comparisons made to American sports, actually. And that's why I was joking around at the beginning. There was the idea of, I believe, people were talking about the idea that MLS franchises kind of retain their value a little bit better compared to some of the European clubs. And they were just kind of, I think they were just the idea of having that stability. And some of these clubs, they're big, huge names, and they're worldwide, and they're trying to appeal to everyone in every country all over the place. And they're not really all that concerned with the people that live in their city. But I got to be honest, there were people all over the world pissed off about this, man.
Yeah, it felt like every group of clubs had their own motivation. You know, it seemed like to me the Spanish clubs were looking for that stability and that just injection of capital. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the English clubs, other than Arsenal and Tottenham, it was just a money thing. For the Italian clubs, it was just a way to claim any kind of relevance, because I don't know the last time that any of those three sides really was particularly relevant on the international stage. I mean, Juventus went to the final, 4 years ago, and it's been pretty disappointing since mm-hmm. then. Neither the other two clubs have made it to the final for a while. I mean, obviously they've won it before, but it's not like they're at the peak, at the pinnacle of European football. And I think for Arsenal and Tottenham, it was just, they were given an offer that they just couldn't possibly turn down. They were probably just shocked to have been invited. Although I do think that Spurs have a bit more culpability there, because I know Daniel Levy in the past has been one of the ringleaders for these kind of shenanigans. But it just seemed like they all had different levels of motivation, and it all came back to money, right? To the money that stability offers.
I immediately was grabbed by the. I kind of thought about league positions, and I was like, Liverpool's not having their best season, Spurs nor Arsenal either, nor is Juve. You know, and that could just be a coincidence. You know, but I feel like that's a little bit of motivation. When sure. you're used to being higher, and sure. this deal happens to be made when you're lower, and I feel like Atletico and Barca and Real Madrid, all those, I mean, they're usually top three, right? So there's some stability there. Yeah, I don't know, man. At first I immediately thought about the league position of about five or six of the teams. And I was like, well, the other teams kind of are having good seasons, you know, like Inter Milan and AC Milan, you know, Chelsea's fought their way back. You know, they're starting to, you know, since Tuchel came, they've looked solid. Just strange motivation. And the big, you know, after the big flip flop, you know, we're so sorry, sort of, not really, we're just figuring out another way to do it. The only thing we've heard is if it was offered to you, you'd have took it.
And I don't know, you know, obviously I can't speak for Mr. Mashiri, but I think that I can probably speak for Mr. Kinwright and for the other folks on the board that I don't know that would be the case. I think that, you know, I think there's an ethos that runs through the club at Everton that is driven at least in some part by the local feeling that is brought by Bill Kinwright. I know not everybody likes Mr. Kinwright, and I understand that. And there's plenty of reasons to not like him, plenty of reasons to like him if you want to. Yeah. But I think that when you have someone like that, I think that's one of the benefits there, because you have somebody there on the ground, you know, who could maybe hear, hey, we're, you know, Farhad could say, hey, we've been invited to this. And you know, you'd have somebody who isn't just thinking about the money, or isn't just thinking about the, you know, the things that you wouldn't think about as a local fan, to have him say like, no, this isn't going to work. This is wrong. And I think they're missing that at a lot of those clubs. And you know, some more than others have been missing it for a long time, especially in England.
Yeah, it was a really very surreal. I had mixed emotions, you know. I was blown away at first, and I was, part of me was down, because I was like, this is possibly the league kind of being blown apart as we know it, and it's a sad thing. But then part of me was kind of like, I hope these jerks get what's coming to them, you
right,
know?
Right.
And that's, I don't know if that's a healthy way to approach life, you know? And there's that other selfish part of me that's sitting there thinking, I want points deduction so we get better places, yeah, you know? And immediately, sure, I jumped to that, and is my desire for them to have a punishment that's not just financial, just straight up selfish need or selfish desire for my team to be lofted up the table more? Or is there, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of something that I do feel like they earned something. And it'd be great if that helped me, you know, it helped us, helped Everton, but I just don't know if that's the most just way to do it. What is what is your punishment stance on all this?
So I think that it runs three separate levels. You know, there's what I would love to see happen, which is, you know, throw them out. Just, oh, you wanted to leave? Okay, well, then here's the door. You can leave. I think probably, you know, now that they've apologized and, you know, come back, we'll probably pass that. I think my heart says, you know, points deductions, you know, whether it's nominal or large, you know, something like 10 or 15 points, so that, you know, it sends a message, but it's not season altering for them, although maybe it should be, some kind of financial fine, so that you can punish these owners directly. And then either a transfer ban or a European ban, however long it is, one season, one transfer window. What I think will end up probably happening, what my head says, is that they'll be slapped with a fine that will feel really big, but will actually not be very much. It'll be something like $15 or $20 million, which is obviously a lot of money, mm-hmm, but you know, that's a, you know, I saw in one of my group chats, you could buy a shoddy winger for $20 million. Like, you know, yes. you could spend, you know, $20 million isn't enough to get to even buy you necessarily a quality starter for one of these teams. So, but I can't imagine that it will go any farther than nominal penalties, so that we can say, yeah, we did this, especially because it seems like the resolve of UEFA and the resolve of the other leagues has kind of collapsed as far as punishment goes. Seems like they're kind of more happy to be like, okay, hey, we've avoided this, you know, we can put the cat back into the bag, you know, whereas I think a lot of us, myself included, kind of see this as, if you don't hit them with some kind of actual punishment, then you're just kicking the can down the road, and they'll just wait until the next time that they want something, and they'll start, you know, start gigging this up again, and we'll be right where we were 18 months, 24 months, you know, 3-4 years down the line, and then we'll be there subsequently every 2 to 3 years whenever they decide they don't have enough money or they don't have enough power or whatever it is. I think unless you really find a way to show them this is wrong and you've done wrong, I don't know that we can be done with this.
Didn't Barca come out today and say they're not out?
Yeah, I mean, I and while a lot of these clubs, all the clubs in England have come out and basically apologized, it doesn't change the fact that they nailed their colors to the mast, right? They, according to Mr. Perez, over in Spain, they signed the blood oath, right? Like, they, you know, they got together and spit shook on it. It was unbreakable. So they were, I guess before they got their legal folks involved, they were pretty sure this was going to go down, and mm-hmm, they didn't care. You know, that if that was his perspective, that it was done, it was signed, the contracts had been signed. I can't imagine that they went into this with their eyes closed. I can't imagine that they didn't understand, you know, based on what Mr. Perez said, they knew full well people were going to be angry. They knew full well there were going to be punishments, and they were ready to face it. And I think two things worked against them. First of all, I don't think they anticipated getting told no by PSG, Bayern Munich, and Borussia Dortmund. I think they're three heroes here, even though we don't necessarily like PSG's ownership and we don't like big clubs from Germany either. You know, but they deserve some, for whatever reason, whether it was their own financial interests or because they felt like it was the right thing to do, they looked at this and said no thanks. And apparently so did Red Bull Leipzig, which is shocking. So did Porto, which is like, oh, okay, Porto, that doesn't make any sense, but all right. you know, so so you know, they had a lot of clubs that said no. And I think once it became clear that they weren't going to get a whole lot of joy out of any other European clubs to join this thing, it became untenable. And I think the other thing is that I think they anticipated because there were no fans in the ground that the fans wouldn't be able to find a way to make their voices heard outside of social media. And I think they were legitimately shocked at the fact that not a huge amount of people, but a decent sized group of people started showing up at their things. And it goes to show you, both sports wise and, you know, in your civic life, what a loud small group of people can accomplish if they just go and do it. And so I think they went in with their eyes open, knowing that this was going to be unpopular. And I think only when it became clear that it was untenable entirely did they abandon ship. I think they figured this would be something that would garner outrage for 2 or 3 days, just like everything else that happens, and then our short attention spans would move on to the next outrage, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And I think that they didn't get the two news cycles they needed before they had to shut it down. So, I mean, really kind of surprising.
I think it's interesting. The first two teams to pull out, Chelsea and City, they're still in Champions League semifinals, right?
Yeah, that's true. And maybe a phone call from the folks at UEFA convinced them that this was not, you know, they were willing to take the financial bath of throwing them out and dealing with whatever repercussions came from the broadcasters on that. And I hadn't even considered that they were the first two out, and that could have been why.
I don't know if that's the case. It could be coincidence, or it could be just one of those things, like put it on the pile of reasons to pull out. You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, I thought that the Chelsea supporters were massive. I mean, I thought that was one of the big things for me, was them being out there, you know. And I've heard people say, you know, not normally all that happy to say good things about Chelsea supporters. You know, they're not always the most friendly bunch, but I think them coming out, I mean, I think they said that they sent Petr Cech outside to try to reason with them, right? Yep. And they were just not to be reasoned with. And rightly so. I think there's one other unsung hero here who I want to shout out, and that is whoever it is on Merseyside that's like turning around banners, like professionally screen printed banners in 45 minutes. Whoever that is, that guy, whatever they're paying him, they should double it, because I'm telling you, they had those banners up at Anfield. It seemed like it was like 45 minutes after the announcement was made. They had professional grommeted banners up hanging on the, you know, maybe they had them prepared. Maybe they had FSG out banners prepared
just in case. They knew something.
But they were specific. They had dates on them. So like, so whoever is just like, you know, you call them and you're like, hey, I need two banners that I can hang up on the gates at Anfield. And I need them as soon as possible. And, you know, the screen printer is just like, yeah, sound, just come by in 20 minutes and I'll have them ready for you. That guy, he deserves a real pat on the back.
I like the idea of a pub right near Anfield, like having a large glass case that you have to break to get all the emergency banners out. Like, get the FSG stuff, let's go!
Yeah, they're always ready, right? Yes. And I understand it's an it's an unpopular ownership group sometimes, right? I'm not sure how many LFC fans would have been super angry at Fenway Sports Group last year, you know, when they were having the trophy and doing all those things, or 2 years ago when they were winning the Champions League. You know, you heard occasional FSG out shouts from them, but I think now, you wonder if these owners are going to face some kind of reckoning where the fans are just not going to put up. Not only are they angry enough to not put up with this, but they're so angry that they're no longer going to put up with Fenway Sports Group or with Stan the Man down in Arsenal or whoever else is involved. You wonder if now they're looking for the way out because they've realized that their positions are untenable.
Protests at the Manchester United training ground as well. Some Glazers out folks. I'm also curious about the other way around too. The idea of the owners going, you know what? I've had it, you know, I'm going to take my ball and go home kind of thing. I'm going to sell the club, make my money, walk away, and you can deal with some other guy. You know what I mean? Like I could believe that happening. You hear rumors about, you know, owners want to sell now because of this. We'll see, you know. Yeah. Don't let the door hit you, brother.
Yeah, right. I'm sure there's plenty of Middle Eastern nation states and Chinese investment consortiums that are happy to take that off your hands. It's not particularly scary to hear that one billionaire doesn't want to own LFC anymore. Right. I'm sure some other billionaire will be more than happy to take them off your hands. So,
or in the case of Wrexham, you know, Mac and Deadpool. All right.
Yeah, hey, there you go. Right.
Mac and Deadpool making it happen. Yeah. All right.
You know, if they had followed through with that plan of, you know, just kicking those six out and promoting six clubs, Wrexham would have ended up in League Two. So
yeah.
That would have been a real quick promotion for not just not just Mac and Deadpool, but also Bootlegger from Twitter.
Oh yeah, I do follow him. I'll be honest.
Yeah, big Wrexham guy.
Yes. All right. So, really quick, last thing I want to touch on about the Super League dumpster fire is Everton's reaction. So
strong.
I was proud of it.
Yeah, I think. I think some of the language was very fiery, right? You just, I'd like to know who was the one who wrote out a bulk of the statement. I think that's something that I wonder if it was, you know, just someone from the communication staff or if it was, you know, Bill Kenwright's flowery language, or if it was, you know, who wrote it?
It was Mo Besic. Of course. It had to be Mo Besic back there.
I knew we were keeping that guy around for a reason.
He's got to be doing something, like, man. Right. You said it, fiery language, man. If not Mo, then who? Just saying.
It was written by the Arteta money, you know? Who knows? It's around somewhere doing something, so...
Yeah, I was very proud to read that. It was cool, especially with, you know, a lot of other clubs recognizing it. That was refreshing. You hear a lot of hypotheticals from these other clubs, but hypothetical is not a historical event.
I think that the last two events that we've had like this, so with Project Big Picture and now with this European Super League, I think we had grown kind of used to, over the years, Everton being a little bit passive when sometimes things aren't going our way. And sometimes you'd like the club to say, like, you know, no, you can't rescind Heung-min Son's yellow card. Like, yeah. or his red card, he snapped our guy's ankle in half. Or, you know, instead of, you know, being kind of soft to Everton, you know, getting the winning the Fair Play Cup for, you know, 5 years in a row or whatever.
Or when Neos gets banned, you know, retroactively,
right.
and he's the first one. And then later on that season, it happens, like, everyone is, like, flopping. Martial flopped in the box is the next year, a year later or something. I was infuriated. Yeah. I don't know. It was later on, and I got so pissed off. And I was like, who's going to say something? Why are the fan channels even saying something?
And so when, you know, and it's always felt like Everton, you know, was happy to kind of be passive in those situations. Yeah. And I think these last two times they've really taken a leadership role amongst the rest of the clubs, which they really should, because amongst the rest of the clubs, there aren't any other ones as far as history and size that are at that level to be able to take that stand. And that's why last time with Project Big Picture, they included Everton, right? That's why they thought they could be slick and rope us in. And if we were in, then they'd be home free. And of course we weren't in. Mm-hmm. And I think that would also point to that as to the whataboutism folks.
Yeah.
You know, to the hypothetical folks, you know, we had pretty much this opportunity given to us with Project Big Picture, and the club said, no, thanks. This isn't right. You know, one club, one vote. And if you don't think that they would have just rammed this through had they gotten their way on Project Big Picture, you're wrong, because they would have. That was the – now I think now it's pretty clear that this was the end game. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I just thought of an awful analogy, and I'm going to say it because I'm rolling with it.
Let's
and
go.
It's so Let's ridiculous. Go. It's like, you know, my neighbor, you know, crapping in my other neighbor's yard, you know? And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Taking a dump in the yard? What are you? And he looks at me, he's like, hey man, you'd have done it. Right? You'd have done it. I'm just like, no! How do you know? How do I know?
Why would I have done that?
I was not late at night, you know, really feeling the call, you know, and why? Why would you what? You know, and so that's the thing. It's like the idea of saying, you know, you would have, huh?
Yeah.
You know, you would have.
Not so sure.
It's like, why do you know us so well? You know, it's just, it's that, like, you know, I guess it's that thing inside us that wants to feel like, hey, we're not so bad. Other people are bad too, right?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is go in your house and use the toilet, Rich Sims.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, use the toilet.
Use the toilet.
Mr. Henry, you know, Mr. Kroenke, use the toilet.
You know what? Just saying. I'm not going to clean up your mess anymore. All right, so let's move on.
Yeah, on to the next thing.
I continue to be a silly person. So let's really quickly do a little, can't do a deep dive because I'm not prepared for it at all, but new Champions League format.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the basic changes are the change to the format to where now it's a one single league instead of groups. Everybody plays at least 10 games. And then there's some changes to how you get into the knockout stages, which I'm not entirely sure how it works, but it ends up being more games, which is exactly what nobody wants, apparently. But yet here we are. And then there was some changes to qualification. They added four new qualifiers, one of which is the fourth place team in the French league, or the third place team, someone in the French league, last place team, somebody from France. The winner from Austria automatically qualifies, so you can go ahead and pencil in Red Bull Salzburg there.
Yep.
And then there are two clubs that are put in based on their UEFA coefficient, meaning the two highest rated teams in their UEFA coefficient that did not qualify by traditional means, by, you know, earning it, they're put in as two, like, legacy clubs. So it sounds like, you know, like a way to ensure that that if a club like Juventus or Liverpool finished in, you know, outside of the spots in their league, that they would still have a chance to get in. I think someone pointed out earlier today that Everton's UEFA coefficient is 77th. Mm-hmm. So probably not one of the top two at this time. But I guess if the other, no, that doesn't make sense. No, we're not going to get one of those legacy spots. I'm doing some numbers in my head, and yeah, no, there's no way. There's only 36 teams, and there's clearly two more. But that's the, so those are the changes. I can't say that I'm really all that bothered by the changes to qualification. Like I don't like the legacy spots, but I don't know. I think the thing that frustrates me is that, like, why are you messing with the concept of the tournament itself? Like, why not just keep the group stage? If you're adding four more teams, I mean, I guess then you'd have to add then four more other teams to make it so that the tournament actually worked. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like – I feel like there's this pervasive voice. I'll compare it to something. So college football overtime, I think everyone has always kind of said that college football overtime is preferable to NFL overtime, because in NFL overtime, you can score on your first drive and the game's over and the other team doesn't even get a chance.
It kills a lot of the drama of overtime,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, there started to be this like shift among sportscasters where they started complaining about college football overtime and saying that it's not really football because it's only 25 yards. It's not, you know, calling for it to be changed, when I don't think that there's anybody who's like, yeah, I don't like college football overtime. I think there's another way to do it. And that's kind of how it feels with the Champions League right now. It feels like nobody was saying that they didn't like the Champions League format and that like the Champions League was broken. And now all of a sudden the Champions League was broken before and we have to fix it, right? That was the onus behind the Super League, was that the Champions League wasn't working. And now the onus behind these changes is obviously that somebody felt like the Champions League as it was constituted at the time wasn't working. And I just don't know where that idea has come from. Is adding four new teams, two of which are already probably in the Champions League, making it that much more financially viable, if that's the problem? Mm. I don't know. I don't know what the changes are for. It doesn't seem like it makes it any more compelling. It doesn't seem like it makes it any more marketable. What's the point? Why fix it?
Like I like the idea of France getting more teams, because I feel like I respect the French league more than I think maybe that I ought to. But I feel like tons and tons of talent comes from there, like so sure. much talent sure. comes from the French sure. league, and
they had two semifinalists last year.
That's what I was gonna say. They tend to show well. You know, yeah. in a lot of these European tournaments. So I don't know. I'm fine with that. And I like RB Salzburg. Yeah. You know, I think they're quality, and I think they're entertaining, and they usually bring a lot of quality to the tournament as well. Sure. Those are competitors who can win some games. And they're also, I think, one of the top three French teams can, you know, they can put someone, you know, they can upset somebody, you know, sure. and I think Salzburg can too. But I guess it's the legacy team thing that's bugging me more than anything. Just the idea of you almost qualified, and that's good enough for us. Come on in, man.
You know, I don't know that you even have to have almost qualified, right? I think it's based on your coefficient from the last five
years. From last season? Last 5 years? That sucks.
Last 5 years. So I mean, hypothetically, obviously this wouldn't happen, right? But hypothetically, a team like Real Madrid or Juventus could get relegated and then still, as I understand it, still qualify for the Champions League as far as their UEFA coefficient. I don't like it. It seems like this has been coming, right? And it seems like it's a little bit of a slippery slope where it now it's two, but the next time that they want to fight about this, it'll be four, and then it'll be eight, and then eventually it'll be 12, and we'll be right where we were, and they'll either be you know, 60 teams in the Champions League, or they'll still be 36, and 12 of those teams will be automatic qualifiers every year.
Yeah.
And if they're automatically qualifying based on their last 5 years, and their coefficient is based on their performance in Europe, then they'll qualify every subsequent year because they won't have missed Europe ever. So it's, I guess, you know, I said I wasn't bothered. I guess I am bothered.
It's irritating. That's the part that irritates me about the whole thing. I'm cool with those other two teams. I think they make the tournament more interesting, more, you know, expansive in a good way. And I understand if their numbers aren't right. But I really think, I don't know. I feel like this is throwing a bone to those Super League type teams.
Right. Well, they negotiated this. I think this is another piece that makes it really frustrating that just kind of dawned on me. They've been negotiating this for months, you know, negotiating in good faith with Juventus and Real Madrid. And so I think it was specifically with Manchester United and Juventus were the two teams that were really driving this, negotiating in good faith with UEFA to get this. And then on the eve of getting exactly what they negotiated for, again, in good faith, they pulled their Super League stunt. And then they still get what they negotiated for. So at the end of the day, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to them now saying, okay, we're going to use the Swiss model and we're going to add these four teams. But for the first 5 years, this coefficient nonsense is meaningless. For the first 5 years, this is going to go now to the, you know, the winner of the Belgian league and the winner of the Tippeligaen or whoever they decide as fifth place in the Premier League, you know, going down another place in Spain or in Italy.
You know what would be cool? I realize this is a silly thing to say, but I like the idea of just having rotating spots. You know what I mean? Like give an extra one to Serie A 1 year and an extra one to Bundesliga 1 year. And you just,
base it on like, you know, whoever of the top five leagues, whichever non-qualifier had the most points this season, gets that spot. You know, so even if you finish in fifth place, if you have more points than a team that finished, you know, in fifth place in Italy,
not every team has the same number of teams in their league. Not every league. Sorry.
That's fair. Yeah,
that's the only issue.
I don't know.
We're trying to solve some big problems here, Jason.
Yeah, right. Anything's better than the legacy thing, especially when you really get down and think about it. When you really kind of drill down and think, what this actually means is that you know, right now it means that Juventus qualifies even though they're not qualifying, right? That's what this means.
Yeah.
And that probably means that Tottenham qualifies even though they're not qualifying, right? Or that Liverpool qualifies even though they're not qualifying. Whoever it is that finishes on the outside, you know, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know if you've already started hearing conspiracy alarms going off, but they're like, the Super League was announced and made everybody pissed off so they would let the Champions League reforms slip in unnoticed.
It does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it? Like, I mean, you know, I would hate to think that, like, all of his righteous indignation was theatrical, was entirely performative, and that he was just really selling it so that they could slip this through. I don't know that Ed Woodward resigns if that's the case, right? I mean, they're really going to sell the bit if you know, you know, part of it is that Ed Woodward goes away.
Jeez.
Hey, maybe you're right. Maybe it's one of those things where the truth is stranger than fiction.
Hey, I got to be honest. I don't subscribe to that particular conspiracy theory. I just think it's interesting to pose the question. So
it bears consideration.
So anyway, while they sort out that mess, good things in the Everton world. I'll start with the what I consider the shorter topic because I don't think it's a long one for right now. Marcel Bruns, apparently it only took him listening to Zed Cars one time around to sign that new contract. So that's the thing that happened. And that I think that's a good thing.
I think I agree. I was able to, I'd like to think that him talking to some Everton supporters at the weekend is what pushed him over the edge. He decided after speaking with us that he wanted to sign on for three more years. I think that I don't know that you can really point to anything definitively at this time that has been a major success for Marcel. But I also can't point to anything that's been a major failure. I mean, I think the team is better now than it was when he arrived. I think he's made some shrewd purchases. Luka Dean. I think you could argue that Yerry Mina was a good purchase. But basically raiding Barcelona when he first started was smart.
Godfrey, man.
Godfrey. Yeah, Godfrey. Bringing down the prices on Alan Decore, and obviously getting James on a free. Mm-hmm. Those are good buys. But with that, you also have to consider, and maybe he didn't make these decisions, but you have to consider Alex Iwobi, and you have to consider Fabian Delph. And, and I think one of the things that will really speak volumes will be what happens with Moise Keane now. Are we able to turn Moise Keane around for more money than we spent on him? I think we ought to be, based on what it looks like.
Absolutely.
And I think that'll be a big win for Marcel Brands, because I think that could have been a big loss if he had gone to PSG and been what he has been here. So that'll be a win for him, so long as it comes to fruition. And then the youth squad, where do the youth players go from here? And is there a real opportunity for young players to become a part of the first team squad instead of, like we've seen for probably the last 7 years, we hear about a promising youngster, they make two or three appearances on the bench, maybe they play in an FA Cup game, and then they go to Sunderland on a free. If Brands can end that cycle of us losing youth players for free or for very little money while we watch, the team across the park sell literally piles of garbage for £20 million, we really have to figure out how to compete at that level. And I think that's a big task for Brands to I think that will be one of the big things that he's judged on whenever it is that his time at Everton is over. So far, I think he's been fine, and I'm happy that he's going to be here.
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little more positive,
fair enough.
Although you're pretty positive, to be frank, you're pretty positive.
Yeah. On this, yes.
No, yeah. Transfers-wise, I think transfers, I do think, not everything's been a hit.
Yeah. Agreed. It's never going to be.
I think the stuff that's been almost more impressive to me is his ability to move folks along. Shifting out places on the roster, shifting people out, getting them out, to more appropriate destinations. And I feel like there's something happening with the youth squads, man. There's something happening with the youth squads. I feel like there's a new mindset where I feel like players are, they're going to start moving players along as well there. And I feel like we're starting to see that as well. And I think you're seeing a lot more players playing up. A lot more 16-year-olds playing with and 17-year-olds playing with the U23s. And you see some of these players making the bench. There's a lot of them making the bench, man. And I realize we have a lot of injuries, but still, that's awesome. There's a lot
That's been such a weakness for the club over the last however many years. I mean, and none of that is Brands' fault, right? But for a long time, you'd find that our U23s were all 19, 20, 21 years old, and they were playing and they looked really good. And this comes back to my maybe unpopular take that Mr. Unsworth should find new employment. But
I don't know if that's necessarily unpopular. I've heard it. Okay. I've heard it before. Well, but go into it a little bit, just so people who haven't heard that before.
Well, just because, you know, it's all well and good to win, you know, to win plastic trophies at the U23 level. But that is not, you know, borne fruit for the senior squad. You know, really, if you really think about youth products of Everton over the last, you know, since Ross Barkley, let's say, you're mm-hmm. really talking Tom Davis. And that's the list. Everyone else that, you know, people might point to DCL or might point to Holgate, but we purchased those guys when they were ready to go. You know, DCL was starting for the Sheffield United first team. Holgate, I believe, was playing regularly for, was it Barnsley? Is that who we bought him from?
Yeah, it was Barnsley.
And so I don't really count them. It's really, you know, really Tom Davis. You know, Anthony Gordon is on loan at Preston, and we'll see how that goes. We'll see how it goes if and when he comes back. A lot of our defenders have really gone on loan to clubs like Reading, and that's another thing. We got to stop sending players on loan to Reading. but we send them on loan, and they don't really impress, or they get hurt, or they, you know, they start for a little while and then they fall off. And that could be a mentality thing. That could be any number of things. But meanwhile, we've got 21-year-old players on our U23 side. You know, every couple of years, winning PL2 or winning the U23 FA Cup or whatever it is that they do, and you get smiling pictures of Rhino with the trophy and with these guys who really ought to be on loan at, you know, wherever, instead of, you know, wasting away at Finch Farm and not really ever fulfilling their potential, because then they turn 23 and we're like, well, what do we do with you? You know, then you get like a Luke Garbutt situation where the manager doesn't even know who he is, and he's been at the football club for 8 years. You know, that's, you get situations like that. And I think that's largely down to what I call the, you know, as a baseball fan here in America, what I call the 4A syndrome, where you've got all these players who are just, you got them down at the AAA level, at the highest minor league level, hitting home runs, batting 400, you know, doing all kinds of wonderful things. And then you bring them up to the big leagues, and they, you know, they can't hit a beach ball with a barn door.
Yeah.
And so you send them back down, and they start hitting, you know, they're hitting the hell out of the ball again, and you bring it back. And so you get these players who are really, they're not major league players, but they're not.
Yeah.
And I think Everton has been so good at producing the Matty Penningtons, right? At producing those guys who are just, you know, they're way too good for U23. And at the U23 level, they dominate the 16 and 17 year olds they're playing against.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you bring them up to the top squad, they just can't cut it. And so then, you know, you end up letting them walk away at the end of their contract for nothing, or you sell them for some nominal fee to some League One side. And that's, I just find that to be really frustrating. So if brands can sort out either a pipeline to the first team, or at least monetizing that youth setup in a way that we're selling these players on and making some money, I think that would be a big success for him. And I think the first step to that, frankly, is, you know, telling Mr. Unsworth, unfortunately, hey, you've been a great servant to the club, you know, go manage a championship side.
I wonder if it's a situation though where, you know, Unsworth has sort of been just doing what he feels like to be right. He was given a task, make the team good. He's been doing that, but now he's got someone who's brought a different type of philosophy, a different type of mindset. And I would be really curious to see if they start thinking, okay, stylistically, this is what we want to do, and these are the type of players we want to bring in, and these are the type of players we want in these type of positions, and this is how we want to do development now. And if Unsworth taps into that and is on board with that, good stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'd be happy if I believed that he could transition from the broken 4-4-2 that they're running down there, which I love 4-4-2, right? I'm all about it. But but that's not what we play at the top level. It's been what we play at the top level for maybe 6 weeks out of the entire time that I've followed this team, much to my chagrin, because I think it works. But we don't do that. We've never been that side, other than for a few games under Ancelotti and maybe some games under Duncan. You know, we have managers that want to run 4-3-3 or want to run what I call 4-5-0-0-0-0-0-0-1. And when you're not doing that at the U23 level, you're teaching guys to do something that they're not going to need to do unless we send them to Sunderland on a free, which we do. Morgan Feeney, you know. It's, you know, I get sick of hearing these names that are supposed to be really good. And of course, you're never going to get 100% strike rate on your youth setup. No one does. Right. I mean, if you look at Liverpool, what do they have on their side as far as people that have come out of their academy right now? Just Trent. Right. That's it. If you look at Chelsea, who on their side has come through their academy? Mason Mount. He's a great player, but it's really, I mean, they have Tammy Abraham and they have a bunch. So maybe that's a bad example.
They buy so many players.
They do.
And yet they
buy so many players, and yet they still have three semi-regular starters in their big league squad that have come through their youth ranks.
Yeah. I mean, they send so many players on loan. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I think Marcel's doing. He's doing a good job putting players out on loan too.
Let's get these guys good loans.
Yeah.
Let's get these guys good loans. Yeah, that's a great loan. Blackpool, I love that. Love that loan. I love Anthony Gordon at Preston, because, you know, I thought that he needed to play, but I didn't think he was good enough to play at Everton. I didn't think he really, really impressed when he was given opportunities, other than one time against Leicester City that people like to point to.
Branthwaite at Blackburn was going pretty well.
He just got injured,
so he's going to be out now. But their manager was very complimentary, which is cool.
Yeah, but we've also got the defender on loan at Reading, which, again, why we ever send players on loan to Reading?
I had a lot of hope for Lewis Gibson, dude.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he could still be a good player. Yeah. But we send these guys. I mean, Reading seems to be a black hole where our players go to struggle and to stall. We sent Ja Virginia there last year.
Oh, dude.
And he played like three games, and then the manager decided, no, I'm done with him.
Yep.
You know, I understand maybe he didn't perform very well, but like, you took a 19-year-old goalkeeper on loan, friend. Like, this was part of the deal.
Yep.
You know, so, but I mean, if Brands can get these guys good loans, as he has done, and if he can at least start to kind of make it so that we're at least creating a pipeline to, if not first team players, then money. because then you can turn around and spend that 10 million, 5 million that you get from a promising young youth player on a player who maybe is ready to go. Or you can invest it in five more youth players.
Additionally, I mean, we're talking about a guy who makes a lot of decisions in the club, even down to like our kits. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the way our kits look. And he makes a lot of decisions that I'm not completely sure everybody is aware of. You know?
Yeah.
I remember when he first came in, he said, yeah, I like to have a say on that kind of stuff. I remember very early, like him saying, yeah, I care about all these things. So, I mean, he's got his hand in a lot of different pots. And I don't know. I think overall the club looks a lot better right now.
I think you're right. Yep. I think it doesn't always feel like it, but we're much closer to where we want to be now than we have been, even in times that we've qualified for Europe, right? Mm-hmm. Even times that we've scraped our way in seventh place. I think we're far closer now to what it is that I think we all want. You know, and I think that, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who think, you know, we're right there, we're right on the cusp. I don't know if that's the case. I think we're still a little ways away.
Yeah.
But we are so much closer now than we were before Brands showed up. That's for sure. I don't know that we've had a squad with this kind of quality in it in a long time. Doesn't all fit together always, and we're missing some pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you give Brands time, if we give you know, this summer will be a really good test to see, can we fill that slot at right back? As much as we all love Seamus Coleman, it's time to start looking for the Luka Dean over there, right? It's time to, we loved Leighton Baines, but we still acknowledge that it was time. If we can find some more attacking creativity, you know, and we can get deals on those guys where we're not paying through the nose for guys that may or may not work out, then I think we'll look really good. I think this will be a telling off season for brands. I think so far so good. I'm hoping that we'll get, you know, a nice fun off season as far as signings. And we can all point to that as his masterclass in getting this team to the Champions League.
Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like his job is a grind. It's a long grind. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And, you know, it's going to be slow progress every year, you know. Yeah. And I think just kind of taking a reassessment every year to look at the whole picture rather than just, oh, that signing didn't work. He sucks. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot to think about, you know. So.
And I think, you know, we've also changed what it is that we want from him in the last 18 months, right? Because whenever he came, the idea was kind of like, let's buy potential. Mm-hmm. And now we've reached a point now where with Carlo Ancelotti and with guys like James Rodriguez in the team, with you know, DCL maybe hitting a little bit earlier than we expected him to, and with, you know, Richarlison being as good as he is and being the kind of player that traditionally we've only had for so long, there's a lot of pressure to change that mentality to win now. And I think that he's done a good job so far of marrying those two by, you know, you go out and you get Decore and Allen, who are maybe a little older than you want, but you also bring in Ben Godfrey, right? So you're still focusing on that, the future. You're still focusing on those players who are going to, if not be Everton players for the foreseeable future, right? If not for their entire careers. You're talking about players who were going to someday garner you a big paycheck, which you can go reinvest in other Ben Godfreys. You know, Ben Godfrey, he seems to like it at Everton, but he's not a local lad. He's got no loyalty to this specifically. So, you know, when the time comes, if the time comes, great. You know, we'll take the money, we'll double our money, triple our money on him, and we'll go do it again. And I think Brands has that mentality, and I think that's good. I think that's a good mentality to have, and not – he seems like the kind of guy, and maybe it's just him being Dutch, but he seems like the kind of guy that doesn't look at these things too sentimentally, right? Who doesn't look at things through that lens, and I think that helps, you know, when you can – he just kind of – he seems very – and again, you know, maybe I'm stereotyping him because he's Dutch. This has been my experience with Dutch folks, is that they're, you know, they're sometimes a little bit cold, but sometimes you need that cold, calculated eye for this specific role. I mean, it's not quite Moneyball, but it's, you know, he's just looking at, looking at a skills versus dollars and cents and making financial decisions and player decisions that are going to help the club, you know. So, and he's also about good guys too. I think that's the other thing to point out is he does seem to have a little bit of that sentimental focus on finding guys who fit the culture of the club, which is important too.
Agreed.
You know, we're not just going out and buying, you know, and we may buy this guy someday. So I don't want to, you know, we're not just going out and buying like Memphis Depay, right? Like somebody who maybe isn't the best character guy, or people say that. I don't know. I never met him. He could be the greatest guy in the world, but
I actually don't know enough about him. I know that I don't know. I think it depends on the team. He seems like he's fit in at Lyon really well.
Yeah, I feel like at Man United, I remember him being a bit of a problem child. So like that's why
I heard a story or two, and I never knew if they were true. So I was just like,
I just figured maybe they're. Yeah, sorry if you're listening, Memphis. I didn't mean any offense.
I love the idea of Memphis watching this. You know, I know you're big time footballer and all, but let's deal
maybe
with
it. He Googles his name and somebody, you know, types all this out. So he might see it and I didn't mean anything by it.
Oh, Jake, pissing off Memphis already. All right. So
he hasn't even gotten here yet.
All right. So Marcel Bruns, I get the criticism, but I also I think the new contract's good.
Three more years. Let's do it.
Yep. Last thing before we move on to Arsenal. This past weekend, Everson USA live event happened. I got to see some of it like replay style, but I didn't get to see it live because of children playing the sports. Too many games that day. But you were there. You were there in the thick of it. Tell me about the guests. Tell me about the activities. And tell me about your fond memories.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was really well put together by the club. I was a part of the small group that kind of brainstormed it and kind of got it to the club. So that was really, really nice to kind of see it come to fruition, come together. It wasn't exactly how we had it planned when we started drawing it up. I think when we started drawing it up, we had it planned to be in person and be together and drink a lot and do all those things that you do when you get together with people you like. And that didn't, obviously COVID didn't dissipate like maybe we hoped it would. But with that being said, I think, you know, we brought the ideas to the club. Tony did, who I know you talked to last week, and who is everybody's favorite member of the fan forum. He brought our ideas to the club, and they were all about it, and they were all about setting it up, and they really went to town. I mean, I don't think that we anticipated it being as, I think our idea was maybe a little more grassroots, right? I think we were thinking like, oh man, maybe if we all DM Tim Howard at the same time, he'll come on. So had the club's backing was huge to get all these different guys, to get Marcel Brands on to talk to us live, to get, obviously I think the crown jewel of the event was getting Tim Howard on to answer questions live. And the fact that he took the time, and the fact that everyone at the club took all the time to really push that together was really, really, really cool. Some of the other highlights, I think, were I really enjoyed the interview with Sandy McIver. Hearing her experience as a college athlete in the United States and how that prepared her to be a professional goalkeeper, that was really cool.
Because she played for Clemson, right?
She did play for Clemson, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed hearing from Willie Kirk. I think, you know, we had him live for a little while. We had Dr. Everton live for a little bit, which was really cool. He's one of my favorite people to hear on podcasts. Anytime I see that he's on the guest list for Toffee TV or whoever, he's just an encyclopedia, like a walking encyclopedia of Everton knowledge. And, you know, you could tell that there was a direction that Darren, the host, wanted to take the conversation with him. And it was clear that we were going to follow every single, you know, rabbit hole that his brain conceived, and it was every single one of them was an interesting story or a funny anecdote, or, you know, he's like, I want to show you this thing that I have, and he's got like, you know, a sign from St. Domingo's or something, and you're just like, that's incredible, like he's got it all. And then of course at the end we had the Everton quiz, which was there's some app that you download, Kahoot, I think it's called. I guess the kids use it for school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a little trivia, that I did embarrassingly poorly on, in my opinion. It's tough though. There were some tough questions. But yeah, all overall, really, really fun event. You know, really fun to get, you know, to have that kind of interaction, to be able to type questions into the box and have Tim Howard answer those questions was amazing. It was, apart from, you know, actually like sitting down across the table from Tim Howard, right? Which, will that ever happen? Maybe someday, probably not. Tim, if you're listening also, hit me up. Let's have a cup of coffee. I think it was really well done by the club. Everybody seemed to have like gusto for doing it. It didn't seem like anybody was phoning it in, which of course they wouldn't be, but you know, you get the sense that like, you know, okay, well, did they have to go and drag somebody in here for this? But no, they were all enthusiastic. They were all happy with our questions. They were all happy to chat with us. And I think it was a brilliant event.
I'm blown away by the effort involved on the part of the various supporter groups and on the part of the club. That's a big, it's not an easy thing to pull together, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just a really impressive thing. Very impressed. And I get a little, almost get a little emotional thinking about it. I'm a big fan of Tim Howard. You know, big fan of Marcel Bronze. Frankly, any quiz stuff is going to be impossible for me. I'm better at asking the questions rather than answering them. I think Paul gave me a quiz one time that was more American based on Toffee Blue View back in the day. It was like maybe last year, I think, but so not really back in the day. And I didn't do horribly, but you know, he had made a specific like American like Toffee Blues one. But yeah, man, I don't know. I only got to watch like 30 minutes. So I didn't really get it. And it was like sporadic moments that where I kind of skipped. So I didn't really get everything
fair enough.
I wanted to do on Sunday. Monday. Sorry. But yeah, anyway, man, I just watching it was kind of exciting to sit there and see the fan wall and see that was actually, I think that may have been the idea of like looking at the fan wall and seeing everybody's faces on there.
That was cool. It was definitely cool to see and like to go through like the list of people on there and see like, oh, I know that guy. So that was really fun. And I think the one disappointment was that, you know, it happened. And then like immediately after all this news of the Super League stuff started coming out and it was like, it like overshadowed the really fun time that we all had. Cause like, then there was the, because of the nature of this, of that, you know, Everton had done this big thing to connect with American fans. And then there was this kind of collective shame amongst American soccer fans that it was, you know, it was our people who were messing this whole thing up. So I think that was kind of a bummer. But I think the event was fantastic. I think we all hope that next year we can do something similar again, and that we can all get together for it somewhere, probably Miami.
You know what? Never been there. But I also will say, you talked about the collective shame. I will say the majority, of Premier League supporters in America support either the Rich Six or Everton.
That's true.
The majority
Some of them support Fulham. There's a Fulham contingent.
Oh, no. There are little sprinklings of West Ham here, you know, Southampton over here. Those exist. The vast majority are Rich Six and Everton, right? Almost, I would say, 95% of my friends who watch Premier League and support teams are Rich Six fans. Okay? That lets me cleanse some of that shame. Because although being American, yes, feel a burden on that, but I'm an Everton supporter, so screw all you other
shits. Not me. I didn't do it. Not only did I not do it, my club didn't even do it.
You know, I'm just like, you know what? We had the ability to pick these. You know what I mean? We had the, you know, and you picked the ones that were all about the money grubbing.
Gross.
You know? Well done, guys. See? Yeah. So it's just an easy, you know, flaunting it.
Fair enough.
So it is possible if you missed most of the Everton USA live event like I did, I only got some of it. You can go back. You can go back and check it out. So that's what I'm saying. Go back and check it out. Because I'm hoping to watch some with my kids.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely recommend the McIver interview since your kids are young, but they're athletes and maybe someday they'll have to make those kind of decisions. So She was just fun to talk to. Well, fun to listen to. We didn't get to ask her questions. She wasn't live, but it was a fun interview.
So last thing, notice if you were watching, you saw Jake's Cleveland Hummel gear, which is awesome. Soccer.com's got that. We've talked about it before. Please check that out. There's a lot of good stuff to check it out. So look it up on soccer.com for your respective fan group. Personally, I would be into the Carolina Toffees because that's where I'm from. But yeah, think about wherever you're from. And there's some really cool gear on there, y'all. For real.
Definitely.
Gosh, I just dropped a y'all. You're welcome. Remember where I'm from.
American.
Hey. And Southern. Okay, so that's sort of the Everton news segment. Just got done with that. Got to talk Arsenal. Not going to go too deep in the weeds because we got to be honest, it's going to be happening tomorrow, which is by the time people are watching this, that's today. So really just a brief review of what's happening. Arsenal right now, I didn't realize this, they're ninth. They're right behind us in the Premier League with 46 points. They're 13, 7, and 12. Previous match, they stole a point from the Fulham match, 1-1 with a late goal. They made a statement in their 4-0 win over Slavia Prague, which was cool. And before that, a 3-0 win over Sheffield United. Our match with them will feature no Aubameyang and no Lacazette, which I'm good with that. But you know something, they still have Nketiah to play up top, who's a good player. I mean, they're still Arsenal. They still have talent, right?
Right.
Still have talent. Right. And yes, they're still learning a system. They're still developing a fresh new culture with Arteta. But hey, there's still talent there. Probably starters looking at like Leno, Chambers, Holding. I guess it's Mari, Xhaka, Ceballos, Partey and Saka, Smith Rowe. Those are my players. I like watching those players. Those are quality players. Probably could see Pepe starting as well. And Nketiah. Who are the players on Arsenal where you're like, yeah, I'd worry about them?
I would normally say, I look at Pepe and I look at Saka because they're just both, I guess the thing that comes to mind when I think of them is fast. And that makes me nervous when it comes to Everton defenders at times. And maybe that's a little bit of an older mentality because Ben Godfrey is very fast. Mm-hmm. But in the past, those kind of players just kind of seem to run around our guys. And to be honest with you, you said one of the names earlier when you told me that Aubameyang and Lacazette weren't playing. Like in my head, I was immediately like, well, that means Nketiah braced them, right? Like that means like this guy who probably hasn't scored in 18 millenniums is going to score a brace. And here I go again, being the scared Everton fan, but I do think that the two wingers or the two people that I would say are wingers, Saka and Pepe, are the ones that make me a little nervous. If you start Seamus Coleman, you can maybe have him put one of them in his pocket and then just hope that Dean can both contribute offensively and defensively.
Yeah. As far as Everton news, a lot of people are healthy now, but no Doucouré. So
a lot of people are allegedly healthy. We'll see.
Allegedly. Gotcha.
Carlo. Sneaky Carlo.
See, that's the thing, man. We talk about possible Everton starters every week, and he always pulls a fast one, pulls something we don't expect, which I love, by the way.
Yeah.
But it does make it a little frustrating when you never get one right ever. Pickford is back, right? So probably could see him start. I think an interesting one is whether we'll see Holgate or Coleman starting at right back.
I think in this particular game, because of what I mentioned, I think it's important that it's Coleman, just because he has the ability to just eliminate another guy. He's got the ability to run with another guy for most of the match. Maybe he can't do it the whole 90, But I think, you know, he's done it a couple times this season. And I think you've noticed games where he wasn't in. I'm trying to think of the one now. There was one relatively recently where he didn't start, and the left winger just ran riot over them. And so I think it's got to be Coleman for me right now. I don't really like Holgate at right back. It doesn't really seem like he gets the position. So
Coleman, when he's been playing, he's been producing.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. When he's been playing, you know, when he came in the last match, he looked solid. And typically with Carlo, he likes his rotation. So I think we could see Coleman back in regardless. And I don't know if Yerry Mina is going to get a start tomorrow just yet. I think it's his first game back. I don't know about that. I think we still could see Keenan Godfrey and Dean being the rest of the line across. I don't know about the middle three, if it's going to be Davies, Alan, and Sigurdsson, or if we're going to see Andre Gomes get in there. I don't know. Maybe not. Again, Carlo rotates.
Yeah.
Okay, that is what he does. So just when you get comfortable and you think you know what's going to happen, he does a rotation just because he likes to do that. You know?
I think you gotta leave that midfield how it is. I think the midfield was pretty good against Tottenham. I don't think that either of those three guys have done anything to merit being taken off the team sheet.
I would agree.
I know. You know, but you're right. I mean, I could see. I mean, if Gomes came in, I guess it would have to be for Tom Davis. I mean, I guess it could be for Sigurdsson, but Sigurdsson scored two goals last time around.
He looks
good. Tom Davis, and I think Tom Davis has had probably his best stretch as an Everton player.
Yeah.
Over the past month and a half or so. So I don't know that there's any – I guess, unfortunately, for Andre, I don't know that there's really any place for him in the team right now, specifically at this moment. I'm not somebody who thinks that he should be gotten rid of or anything. I like him as a player. But right now, I don't see a role for him to play in the way that we've been playing. I don't think he can do what Tom Davis does, and I definitely don't think he can do what Gylfi Sigurdsson does.
Yeah. I'll be curious to kind of see how that shakes out. And I think – we feel pretty good in a James, Richie, DCL.
Yep. As long as DCL's truly fit, yes, I think that's the key there is if Carlo is playing some games with us again where he's not 100%, so maybe he won't start, then maybe you'd see, and I guess you'd see Alex Iwobi, which is a little disappointing.
I'd love to see him get back to his Iwobinho, but he just hasn't had a performance where, you know, people have been like, wow, do you see what he did? You know, it just hasn't done that lately.
I feel like ever since there was that whole like fake controversy about him wanting to play his preferred position, I feel like it's just kind of been rough since then. And maybe it was rough before that.
It was a little bit before that too, which is why he put that post up, is what some people had said.
I guess like Carlo, apparently, and like everybody else, I'm not quite sure what his preferred position is. Where do you want to play, bud? Like, what? I think we could certainly work that out if that's an issue. I'm certain that we could find a way to plug you in somewhere that works for you. But I don't know. I just don't. Remembering him for Arsenal against Everton is so frustrating because he always was a problem.
Yes.
And you know, so I think he scored on his debut against Everton. it's just frustrating to see now that he just doesn't really seem to be producing. And I'm not really sure what it is that I don't know what success looks like for Alex Iwobi, right? Because he doesn't really score goals.
Yeah, I don't either. And the thing is, like, we've said it. I feel like it's like every week, you know, where we're like, he's a 10 that plays on the wing. That's what Wenger said is his best position. But I also think that he's a 10 that plays on the wing that needs to start on the left, cutting in. To me, like, I don't think he needs to be starting on the right. His final ball is not the best, and he needs to not be utilized as a player that goes to the end line and crosses back. He's just one of the reasons why his final ball is weak, because he's more of a – he likes to create short combinations, incisive, and give a lot of through balls. So
I think I think he may have had his best game this season playing left wing back. I think I think that may have been his most influential performance, if I can remember, was him playing as like a wing back, because he has the ability to get back. He's got some pace, so maybe, I don't know. When Dean was injured, he played a couple games in that position, and I thought he was good. I think that's when you got like the peak of the Iwobi stands on the internet, and now, of course, there's still some Iwobi stands on the internet, but they have been much quieter of late. Cause again, I don't know that we've ever seen him at his best. So I don't know what his best looks like.
I don't know if we have either. I would agree. And I just miss the beans on the omelet days.
Yeah,
can we go back to those?
Right.
Those were nice days.
I'm for it. Yeah, I'm for it.
So what's the score going to be, man?
I'm going to be honest with you. I circled this game when we were talking about the next five games, whenever it was, I think before we played Burnley, I circled this game because I thought we would do well in the other games. And I circled this game as the loss. Right, this is the inexplicable loss. Right, we're gonna come into poor form Arsenal at the Emirates, and it's gonna be like one of those days, like Chelsea away last year, right before COVID, right, where it's just like we beat this team 8 weeks ago, and they're just ripping us apart now. Having said that, every team that has been a part of the Super League has had a poor result in the meantime. So I've changed my mind, and I'm going for 3-1 for Everton.
And I'm going 2-1 for us. All right.
Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I should stick with what my brain has been telling me for weeks. I think Richie gets one. I think he gets his head right and gets one.
Mm-hmm.
If DCL plays, I think he could get one. Mm-hmm. And I think the third one comes from an unlikely source. I don't know who it is. Not sure who it is. Maybe it's Seamus. Fingers crossed.
It's Tom Davies, dude. It's Tom Davies.
Oh, I would love a Tom Davies goal.
That's pretty unlikely. You know what I mean? So
has he scored three times for Everton, I think?
That one is the one that everybody remembers for City, right? But it's I would love to see him just randomly pull out some crazy moment of magic that you did not expect.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Very cool. All right, so we're picking two of us picking wins. It's not always the case, but hey, it happens. It happened this time. Jake,
you regret it, boys, please.
So that, Jake, that's the show, man. We're done.
That's it. All
right. Yeah. Jake, anything you want to plug besides Cleveland Evertonians?
No, follow us. Like you said, Cleverton OH. We hope to, once the world is still more normal than it is today, we hope to get together at least here. So if you're in Northeast Ohio, or if you're ever passing through, shoot us a DM. We're happy to have a drink. We've got a really friendly bunch. Cleveland's a very friendly city, so we're always happy to meet new folks and to grow our group. Buy our gear on the soccer.com website. I'd love to run into somebody not in Cleveland wearing Cleveland Evertonians gear. It would just really, really kind of tickle me. And then as always, when I talk about our gear and our logo, shout out to Everton Designs, who gave us this brilliant
That's
logo.
Awesome.
So always want to give him credit for that.
Always seems like good people every time I see him post.
Yeah. Definitely.
Seems like good people. It's awesome. Very cool. Well, Jake, it's been a pleasure. I'm going to go ahead and do my Taffy Blue spiel now. So if you've been digging what you're hearing and or watching, please subscribe to the Taffy Blues YouTube channel and or podcast. We'd really appreciate it. If you're into the social media thing, follow the Taffy Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We don't have I don't think we have a whole lot of other social media that we're into. The Toffee Blues MySpace. I don't think that's a thing. But yeah. Hey. I'll be curious. If you find it, let me know. Also check out the Toffee Blues website. There's all things Everton on there. A lot of cool guys that you end up hearing and or seeing on this channel. And they let me hang out in the chat, the group chat sometimes. It's very kind of them. They throw me a bone. They're like, ha, Jerry, you're old American. Great. So it's great. It's awesome times. So check out those guys. They write some cool stuff. Insightful opinions. And everybody, that's it. We have no more content for you. That's game over. Jake, you have a good weekend, man. I appreciate you coming on. It's good to talk to you on this.
Absolutely.
Most eventful of weeks. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy times. Really appreciate it though, man. It's good to talk to you. Good to catch up. Everybody else out there, really, really need 3 points tomorrow. And actually, that'll be today. You're seeing this, hearing this today. So we need 3 points tomorrow, today. Yeah. Do it. Yeah. All right. Much love, everybody. Have a good one. Stay safe. Take care. Bye.